In association with For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site, this is For Whom the Podcast Tolls. And now, Daniel Black and Ethan Lee.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to another episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls here on September 15th, 2015. This is the official podcast of For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site. I'm Daniel Black, writer for Whom the Cowbell Tolls, and joining me is fellow writer for Whom the Cowbell Tolls, Ethan Lee. Hello, Ethan.
How's it going, Daniel?
I'm as fine as a Mississippi State fan who was in Davis Wade Stadium on Saturday can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, I'm sure every one of you knows, unless you literally have been under a rock, because I don't know how you wouldn't know this, but Mississippi State fell to LSU 21-19 on Saturday in Davis Wade Stadium. We will talk about that on the show. We will go over our SEC picks and answer any questions. We got some questions, about maybe five or six, and there could still be some flying in as we record that we can get to at the end of the show. But we will begin with Mississippi State's 21-19 loss to the Tigers of LSU. Well, this was depressing.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
Depressing, yes. And
soul-crushing, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as I did last week, I'll just go ahead and quickly ask you one question. And I guess we could just back and forth give our thoughts on it. But Ethan, what are your thoughts on this game?
We'll start with the negatives.
Okay.
Because in the first half, there were a lot of negatives.
Uh-huh,
and we'll get
uh-huh.
to the positives second half, because in the second half, there were a lot of positives, if mm-hmm. you can see what I'm doing here.
I see what you're saying. You're like going in chronological order as the positivity increased.
Yes. First and foremost, the offensive line and running backs, they nowhere to be seen in the first half. The offensive line was sketchy at best. I mean, it improved as the game wore on, but it wasn't enough. And when it did come together, it was already too late at that point mm-hmm. due to some other factors in the game.
Certainly.
I don't think many Mississippi State fans would have predicted that Brandon Holloway would be our best back right now. A lot of them said, you know, he wouldn't be the worst, which is what the projection was, that he'd be fourth on the depth chart. But right now, he is the surest thing that we have at running back. And I think that has to do a lot with the way LSU plays defense and the speed they have on defense. Shumpert couldn't get away from the tackles fast enough, whereas Holloway could. I don't think that's an indictment on Shumpert's ability. I just think that's how talented that LSU defense was. I'll get to the running game a little bit later. I will go ahead and say now that I think it'll improve as we face slower defenses, because I don't think there's another defense as fast as that LSU defense that we just saw. Sticking with the offense, it really didn't get into any sort of a rhythm. There was no flow to the game. Early in the game, we tried to run the ball, and that really didn't work, and we just kept trying to run it. Dak couldn't get enough time to pass, and, you know, it goes back to my last point. But, you know, we just need to be a pass-happy team from the beginning of the game, every game. And I'll get into that more a little bit later. On to the defensive side of the ball, we need to find a way to stop these elite running backs. The defense played well. Richie Brown did great. The defensive line did their job, but it just wasn't enough. For as great as they played, LSU played better.
Mm-hmm.
You look at their defensive line, and they shut our running game down. We weren't able to really slow their running game down whatsoever, and we thought we had an advantage there. And, you know, turns out we don't. Part of that is the fact that, you know, we played Leonard Fournette, who will be making a lot of money on Sundays. And we won't face another talented running back like that until probably Alabama. But it just, that sucked. Seeing him just continue to get yards no matter what. And the last negative that I really have right now is we didn't force any turnovers. And that really sucked. Because that really could have changed the flow of the game in our favor really quickly. And we were just unable to get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. We were unable to strip the ball. We were unable, you know, they didn't throw it a lot. They threw it 14 times. But those 14 times, there was nothing even close to an interception. So I just, but it's the pass defense for, you know, those 14 times, they didn't really do anything with it. So, do you have any other negatives that I may have missed?
You pretty much went over what my main point, which in my opinion was one of the main reasons why we lost this game, and that was
Leonard Fournette.
Well, I was going to expound upon that later.
Okay.
But I'm talking about Mississippi State's run game. I've got the stats for this year's game and last year's game.
They're not going to be comparable at all.
Last year, Mississippi State had a team total of 49 carries for 302 yards, which is 6.2 yards per rush and two touchdowns. The rushing leaders were Josh Robinson, who had 16 carries for 197 yards, one touchdown, which is 12.3 yards per carry, and Dak Prescott, who had 22 carries for 105 yards and a touchdown. Of course, a majority of that came from that 56-yard touchdown run.
Yeah.
And a majority of Josh Robinson's came from a 66-yard run. This year, Mississippi State had 26 total carries for 43 yards, which is 1.7 yards per rush. Well, and one of the two, let's take a look at the rushing leaders, both rushing leaders from last year's game, one of which is no longer on the team. The other had 10 carries for negative 19 yards and a long of 3. And that was Dak Prescott. And our leading rusher was Brandon Holloway, who got 5 carries for 37 yards. Or sorry, yes, 37 yards. And his long rush was 11. If you compare this year's game to last year's game, in my opinion, this is, if you would take one thing we did last year and look at this one, and say, and try to find a reason why we lost this compared to last year's, that would be the obvious reason. Just looking at the team total and rushing, and I'm pretty much beating a dead horse at this point, but I don't care. LSU had 266 rushing yards compared to Mississippi State, who had 43. Last year, I'm going to try to find the team totals. Here we are. Mississippi State had 302 rushing yards. LSU had 89. Do you see something here?
Yeah. I actually want to address the running game, but I'm going to address that a little bit later.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
That's fine.
But yeah, there's definitely a trend there.
And I'll mention one more thing.
Go for it.
and then I'll expound upon my thoughts, because we're just talking about negatives here. I texted you this, and I tweeted this throughout the game, that I have no faith in our offensive line. I came into this year originally going to pick Mississippi State 7-5 with a loss to LSU, and I really should have stuck to that. Although I think Mississippi State has an opportunity to get to 8 wins because we learned some things about SEC teams, but we'll get to that later. But still, I kind of wish I stuck to that 7-5 prediction. And I said that the reason why I don't think Mississippi State could win 9 or 10 games is because I have not a lot of confidence in our offensive line. That was my main concern coming into the year. That was a majority of experts, and I, you know, a lot of the experts I'm not a fan of, some I am, but that's what was the main concern. When you look at players that we lost, it was returning starters, and out of those returning starters, or players we lost, the offensive line was probably the biggest question mark position-wise. And, you know, the one player that got absolutely demolished, if we would pick out one, is Rufus Warren. I don't know if you would agree with me on that or not.
I didn't pay much attention to him specifically.
I mean, I didn't really
but
either.
I know that he's not naturally a tackle.
Yeah, he was converted. I don't remember what position he was converted from.
Tight end.
Tight end was, okay.
He was a big tight end, and they just said, hey, put on like 30 more pounds and you'll play offensive line.
If Rufus Warren, because, I mean, we're playing Northwesterns. I mean, if Rufus Warren gives up sacks and tackle and gives up that as frequent as, or the offensive line against LSU, if they do that against Northwestern State, I will beg for Dan Mullen to bring in Martinez Rankin to start.
Yeah.
Because that's when Martinez Rankin signed out of junior college, that's who we all expected. Boom, he's an automatic starter. Until apparently Rufus Warren just came out of nowhere, once again a converted tight end against someone who has played tackle or at least been a part of the offensive line for his entire football career. But yeah, our offensive line, I remember sitting in the stands and Dak, let's say, he gets sacked. Or he throws an incomplete pass because he has no time to throw. I hear people yelling, "Come on, Dak, what are you doing?" I'm thinking, it's not Dak's fault. Someone literally just busted through just burst through the line and was rushing him within a second of Dak Prescott getting the ball. I mean, why are you blaming Dak Prescott in this situation? But, I mean...
Yeah, I actually yelled at a couple of guys who were making those same complaints. I yelled at them, not at the immediate time. They were complaining about a punt that went into the end zone for a touchback, and, you know, complaining about that. And I just, after everything they'd said, I'd had enough and started yelling at them and essentially told them to shut up with some not so nice words. But it's just, you can't blame Dak for that sort of thing. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's not his fault.
Mm-hmm.
As good as he is, he's not a miracle worker in that sense.
You know, coming into this year, we were pretty much all confident that our running game was going to be just fine. Our running game and our... I'm going to say that our running game just became one of our biggest weaknesses, just automatic. Just all of a sudden became one of our biggest weaknesses alongside the offensive line and our secondary. And for a team that has had the tradition of running backs going back to guys like J.J. Johnson and DeCenzo Miller and Jarius Norwood and Anthony Dixon and Vic Ballard and Ladarius Perkins and Josh Robinson, it seems like we've hit a brick wall. And, you know, Ashton Shumpert is the guy who we all sort of thought was, you know, he is, you know, he's big bruiser type of running back. He is the sort of the quintessential Mississippi State running back. He's the Anthony Dixon type, the Josh Robinson type. And we have found ourselves, I'm not sure of his exact size, but we have found ourselves depending on Brandon Holloway, to get him.
I'm actually going to look their sizes up, their heights and weights on the roster.
Majority of our rushing yards. But our run game was non-existent. And I'll tell you this. I know, Ethan, that you're going to expound upon this, and I guess this could be a good lead-in for that discussion. But this Dak Prescott transitioning into an NFL quarterback type of thing, I'm not a fan of. You know, I'm just going to get his numbers. Through the air, he had a great numbers. 34 for 52 for 335 yards and a touchdown. But when you look at his running numbers, 10 carries for negative 19 yards. Of course, three of those carries are considered sacks. But still, I mean, he had a gain. His total yardage gain was 9 yards. So, I mean, the reason why, in my opinion, 2012 and a bit of 2013, our offense wasn't great, was because Tyler Russell couldn't fit into Dan Mullen's system. That's why Tyler Russell struggled at Mississippi State. He was a 4-star, and I think if he went to Alabama, he could be in the NFL right now. Dak Prescott was the Dan Mullen quarterback. He's big, he's tall, he can run, and he can throw. If you take the run away, and this is a coach that pretty much made a living off of Tim Tebow's name, who is the same kind of quarterback that Dak Prescott is. If you take away the run, our offense isn't going to click. And still, Dak Prescott isn't, I'm not going to say he's a bad passer, but he's not the greatest passer. He was overthrowing receivers in this game, and especially the Southern Miss game, he didn't look super sharp. But once again, if you just depend on him throwing the ball and not running it, our offense doesn't click. I don't know if I'm the only person thinking this. I don't know if you have the same thing, and Ethan, I know you have some thoughts about that, and about three of our questions that we got revolve around that, so maybe we can explain it later or explain it now and then just refer back to this on our questions. But I just don't like it.
I'm actually going to address it now.
Okay.
Because it's actually one of the positives that I saw.
Oh.
And that I thought the passing game, because I, unlike many Mississippi State fans, I don't think that this year's team needs to rely so heavily on the running game. And I'm going to write an article about this. I'm working on it. But our best weapons are Darrenia Wilson and Fred Ross. And then you also have Gus Wally and Justin Johnson.
And those are Gus Wally. I mean, he could be one of
he had a game.
He had, let's find this, 7 receptions for 67 yards.
Yeah. He, including like a reception at like the hip turning around late in the fourth quarter. But, I see the offensive weapons, they're at receiver. We have an experienced, fifth-year quarterback in the SEC. That's not something many other schools have. That's an advantage we have. I see an offensive line that struggles and running backs that don't have the speed and size combination to be able to be effective in this offense. So I'm looking at the pieces that we have, and I think that this team's best hope to get points on the board is through the air. So I'm looking at the positive of, we were able to get 335 yards against a very talented LSU secondary. Granted, they're missing their best player in that secondary, but it's still very talented. It's still LSU. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at an offense that should regularly, in my opinion, throw 45-plus times a game. And that is not something that Mississippi State has had recently, if ever.
I think I saw a stat somewhere, I forgot who tweeted it, but it's something like in games where Dak Prescott, I'm not sure the exact number, but it was something like in games that Dak Prescott has had at maybe 35, 40 passes, I think maybe 40 at least 40 passes, Mississippi State is 0-4. And I'm not saying this as against your statement, I'm just throwing that out there.
That also would likely have to do with the fact that, I mean, we haven't had a passing team ever. Like, we haven't had an offense that's been based around the pass. And my thought behind that sort of stat would be that when we were throwing it those times, we were a running-based offense, and we were behind the eight ball at that point. We needed to get, or not behind the eight ball, but we, you know, we were behind significantly in those games and needed to pass more.
But I mean, once again,
or
you go ahead with what you're about to say.
I think this team, because I don't think those teams were built to be passing teams. I think this team is. And I think that if we are going to have success this year, it's going to have to be with Dak Prescott throwing it over 45 times a game. And that's the biggest takeaway I saw from this game was those fourth quarter drives when Dak was able to just move down the field, mm-hmm. passing through the air really quickly. And we have a question about that. We'll address it a little bit more later. But it's just incredible, an incredibly fast offense through the air, I think, can be effective for this team. And I think if we are able to show dominance with our receivers and our quarterback, these running lanes, you know, the box won't be stacked. And these running lanes will open up. And we will have better chances to get a running game develop later. Many teams try to build the opportunity to throw the ball by developing the run first. I think this Mississippi State offense needs to do it the other way around. Show that you can throw it on anybody and then build the running game from behind that. That's my biggest take when it comes to the offense.
I'll go ahead and talk about, and before I say this, I'm not trying to go over this just to show everyone that I was right, although that actually may end up being the case.
Okay.
But Ethan, do you remember the one thing, the one key, and I think you probably said, you may have said the exact same thing, the one key to this game that Mississippi State has to do, and I think it would probably be a lock to win the game?
Stop Leonard Fournette.
Exactly. I said, you know, we're probably not going to end up stopping him, but as long as we can slow down, we will win. And I didn't say we will have the opportunity to, because we certainly had the opportunity to, and we still, and Leonard Fournette still had an incredible performance. I said we just need to slow him down, and we will win, because I also said that Brandon Harris against this secondary, that'll just cancel out. Brandon Harris's stats he went 9-for-14 for 71 yards, and that was it. That's all he did. That's all LSU did through the air. I simply said it. Brandon Harris versus Mississippi State secondary, bad secondary versus a bad passing attack, they will just cancel out, and the game will focus on the run. Leonard Fournette had 28 carries for 159 yards and 3 touchdowns. He had every single one of LSU's touchdowns. So
I'll see your little "I told you so" and throw one of mine right at you.
Okay.
Do you remember what I said Mississippi State's best chance to win the game would be?
Wasn't it throwing the ball?
It was to force the game into a shootout by throwing the ball, if I remember correctly. Yeah. When we look at the fourth quarter, LSU's defense was gassed at this point. And they were, Mississippi State was just able to drive the ball. We were able to get the touchdown and, drive the ball again and almost get the field goal. We scored 13 points in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And it just shows that if, I don't know the yards that they gained in this quarter, but if they'd been able to do that all night, I think, you add that to your point of stop Leonard Fournette, and we have a Mississippi State victory. Mm-hmm. So, I think the problem wasn't necessarily stopping Fournette. It was more of we didn't get the offense moving fast enough and early enough.
Right.
Because nobody's going to stop Fournette this year except for maybe Alabama.
And I'll tell you the truth, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Ole Miss, who they're playing at home in that game, I wouldn't be surprised if Fournette falls flat on his face against either Alabama, Ole Miss, or both.
Because of their front seven?
Yes.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see those games play out.
Mm-hmm.
But that has to do with some other points we have later with how we think the SEC looks. I will say the last two positives I have about this game, we didn't commit any turnovers. That was beautiful to see, especially against an LSU defense that is better than what I thought it would be, better than what I think a lot of people thought it would be with them missing John Chavis. That was really impressive for us to not have a turnover against them. And you mentioned Leonard Fournette and the running game, how many yards and the three touchdowns he racked up. But I thought the front seven, given the circumstances, I thought the front seven played really well. Richie Brown had 11 tackles and a sack or something like that. He had a great game. So
you are correct. He did have 11 tackles and a sack.
So I just... I thought those were... Obviously, we want more from the front seven. We want more from the offense than just no turnovers and 11 tackles from Richie Brown. But I think that should have been enough, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have any other positives to throw in there? I know that it's a more positive one. And you're typically a little more pessimistic.
Mainly because you started attending Mississippi State in the 2013 season.
So that wasn't that great of a season.
It wasn't a great season. When did you start? Tell everyone when you started paying attention to Mississippi State football.
It was 2010.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I grew up on, Ethan Lee?
Sylvester Croom.
Yeah.
Okay. To be fair, I have had Rick Ray at basketball, and I'm still more optimistic there than you are.
Although, when we went over our record prediction, I'm pretty sure I had us losing 4 or 5 games, and that actually may change with the injury of Eric Holman, but that can be discussed at another time.
Yeah.
I find us being, we'll ask this question. We're going to get off on this right now, but this should be quick. What seed in the NCAA tournament do you think Mississippi State will be? Just right now, if you would just guess just any seed, what do you, that you think Mississippi, or if you can't think of one, give us a range.
Anywhere from 3... 2-9 would not surprise me.
See, my range, you are more optimistic. My range is probably like from 6 to 11.
you've got a smaller range, but, you know.
Yeah, but of course I also have a lower seeded range as well.
Yeah. But back to topic, do you have any other thoughts about our game?
You did mention this, and I'll just you mentioned it, and I'll mention it briefly, that the one positive that I found out of this is that we improved as the game went on, and that made me feel, that made, that, you know, I walked out of Davis Wade Stadium ticked off and beyond angry and just disappointed, but looking back on it, I'm happy that we improved as the game went on. Now, with that being said, for games in the future, I think Mississippi State's going to have to get on a fast start, because when we were down 14-0 and then 21-6, we just weren't able to come back. We just didn't have enough time. If that kind of makes sense. So, well, I mean,
the Aggies always say that they never lose, that they just ran out of time. So
Texas A&M shots.
Yep.
You'll get that here from Ethan Lee.
Except for when we have our guest. I'll be polite then.
Yes, we will have a guest for when Texas A&M comes around. And you and he will have to talk about things to do in Aggieland, because I will be there.
Okay.
But we're going to have to get on a faster start, because that was... We may get into this. We're probably going to get into this in one of our questions. But that first quarter was the worst beginning to a game I've seen Mississippi State play since last year's Alabama game. And in the Alabama game, we just weren't able to come back. In this game, we just weren't able to come back. And although we had an opportunity to, because we had a 52-yard field goal that was just missed, and we could have converted, we could have gotten a 2-point conversion, because the deficit in this one wasn't nearly as severe as the Alabama one, because I think we were down, what was it, 12 points with about a minute left?
Yeah,
something like that. So, and we were only, I mean, we were down 15 going into the fourth quarter, so that's an entire 15 minutes to play. But still, that slow start hindered us in this game. So, but if you want to end it on a positive note, we improved throughout the game, and that was something that I'll take out of the, that I'll come out of this very pleased with. And we will expound upon this in another, I mean, questions, but we will talk about this in one of our questions. But Weston Graves went 2-for-2 in field goals, and one of those field goals was from 43 yards. That's a little minor thing, because everyone will remember a missed field goal at the end of the game, but we did go 2-for-2 in field goals, and one of them was from outside of 35 yards. So those are my main positives I have out of this.
I'm not aiming this at you.
Okay.
I'm aiming it at the fans in general, because I'm sure everybody saw Devin Bell's tweet.
Yeah, that just made me sad.
Nobody should be blaming Devin Bell for that missed kick. Nobody should be tweeting at our players, oh, this is your fault, oh, blah, blah, blah. And just shut up. Just let them be. Because I'm willing to bet that they feel worse about this loss than any of us. I'm willing to bet that they take it harder than we do, because they were actually on the field. They were actually the ones putting in the effort. I don't think Devin Bell should have been in that position. And, you know, shout out to that question that you referenced.
That we will get to.
Yeah, I just... He's a good punter, but he was put in a tough position. Anyone who's blaming him is just absolutely wrong to do so. So that's my final thought on the game for right now. Do we want to go ahead and start looking at the rest of the SEC and go through a really weird week two?
Certainly. We will start, what a way to start, in this game, Auburn 27, Jacksonville State 20, a game that went to overtime.
A game that Auburn should have lost.
You know, I'll go ahead. I never thought I would bash Jacksonville State on this show ever, but I will do that today.
Go for it.
They got so conservative. So daggum conservative. Auburn had three timeouts with about... Jacksonville State got the... They just... what did was the last turnover? Yeah, was the last turnover when Jacksonville State had the 20-13 lead? Was the last turnover that Auburn had that gave Jacksonville State the ball back with about 3 minutes left? Was that a fumble or Jeremy Johnson's last interception?
That was a fumble by Brock Thomas, I believe.
So Jacksonville State recovers a fumble, up 20-13 with about 3 minutes left. Auburn has three timeouts left, and decides to run it up the middle three straight times for a grand total of 7 yards. You throw it up, you run it up the middle once, Auburn calls a timeout. Run it up the middle again, Auburn calls another timeout. Runs it up the middle a third time, and there is so much time left on the clock that Auburn doesn't have to waste their last timeout. And then they're, and I'm not blaming a punter anywhere, punters, kickers are people too, but then their punter comes out and shanks an 18-yard punt that goes out of bounds, and Auburn just gets into the end zone within about 20 seconds.
And then, don't forget that they took the knee.
With... Auburn kicked it out of bounds, so Jacksonville State got it at the 35 with 40 seconds left, and I'm pretty sure they had two or three timeouts left, if I'm not mistaken, and they decide to take a knee.
Yeah, for all the Mississippi State fans that are upset with Dan Mullen right now, like, this could have been Jacksonville State's biggest win ever.
I truthfully think that would be the biggest upset in the history of collegiate football.
Yeah, it just would have been... insane to actually see it happen.
This would have topped. I mean, this would have topped Appalachian State, Michigan.
Yeah,
it would have.
Because of how high ranked this Auburn team, how overrated this Auburn team is.
Auburn's gonna get slaughtered against LSU.
We'll get into that Thursday.
Indeed.
Yeah, no, Auburn's a dumpster fire this year. They were a joke.
Auburn fast. So I guess that's that. Ole Miss scored 70 points again.
I don't know who it was that I follow on Twitter that said this, but someone tweeted out, it feels like Ole Miss is compensating for something. And I just, why are they scoring? What are they trying to prove here? What is the point of scoring that many points?
I'll just go to the box score, because remember against UT Martin, they were up 55-3 going into the fourth quarter, and they just decided to tack on 21 more. I'm just going to go by quarter. They had another 28-0 lead after the end of the first quarter. Had a bit of a struggling second quarter, only got 7 points. So, yeah, they were up, 35-7.
It was 35-14. 35-14 and half.
Yeah, so 35-14. Yeah, you are right. I didn't see that last touchdown. So that's 35, then 42, 49, 56. They were up 56-21 going into the fourth quarter and decided to tack on 17 more points.
What is the point of that?
Now, of course, I will say this, that one of the touchdowns in the fourth quarter was a pick six, and one of the touchdowns in the third quarter was a pick six. So there were two pick sixes.
Okay, well, fair enough there. But I don't get the point of... Okay, why not just tell your guys, you get an interception, just fall down. I don't understand what Ole Miss is trying to prove here. This just seems so ridiculous.
I will say this.
There's no way they're putting out 70-something points on Alabama.
that Ole Miss had one heck of a rushing game against Fresno State, as their leading rusher was Devontae Kincaid, who had 4 carries for 48 yards. Their leading rusher was their third-string quarterback.
Who, yeah, no, this is a terrible rushing game for them.
I mean, they had a monstrous, I mean, they were just slaughtering everyone in the running game against UT Martin. Of course, that was against UT Martin. But I'll go and tell you this. Although the competition has been weak, I give Chad Kelly credit. He's a good quarterback.
20 for 25, 346 yards, 4 touchdowns.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good. I would take that.
But they've got to play Alabama next week. Good luck to the Rebels. Georgia Vanderbilt wasn't really interesting, with the exception of that Vanderbilt actually hung with them. And then right after that, the most interesting game of the week, in my opinion, Toledo 16, number 18, Arkansas 12.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw my most recent piece. Just throwing a shameless plug here for that, but Arkansas was just so overrated.
You were on the you were on that little tiny train with population one of Ethan Lee of people who said Arkansas is not going to be good, and I really give you credit.
I think a lot of it has to do with their offense. They haven't found. I may have. Had Jonathan Williams not been injured, I probably would be wrong right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're relying on Brandon Allen.
You know, in the first game.
Go ahead.
Brandon Allen had such a weird game. He went 32 for 53 for 412 yards. That's really good. But then he had no touchdowns and an interception.
He's not enough. You know, that yardage, that completion percentage, that's right up there with Dak's game against LSU. You know, a little bit better. But they don't. You know, Alex Collins ran it 20 times for a total of 54 yards. Their offense is not built to be a passing offense right now. They don't have the receivers, in my opinion. You know, they've got Hunter Henry, they've got Keon Hatcher, but those are really the only two good receivers on that team that I know of. You know,
continuing our little names here, I'll give some Arkansas receivers credit for their names. There's Jared Cornelius, got 4 receptions, and Jeremy Sprinkle got a reception.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I think Arkansas had the potential to be good, but I wasn't buying their defense. Is one thing I said in the preseason, and you look at their offense, Brandon Allen just wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
And he might be good, but we don't know how good Toledo's defense is. They're good enough to stop Alex Collins, let's put it that way, but you know.
But hey, the Maction has struck Fayetteville with a Rockets victory.
Was there a more overrated team besides maybe Auburn? We don't know what's going to happen with Auburn, but we've seen Arkansas already go down. Was there a more overrated team this season than Arkansas?
As of right now, no.
Okay.
But we could see as time progresses that possibly a team like Notre Dame or Florida State.
Wouldn't it be great if Auburn lost their next 10 games? Shout out 2012.
Yeah, Gus Malzahn would probably be fired on the spot. Seeing what they did to Gene Chizik, he would be fired on the spot.
Because Malzahn hasn't even won anything, whereas Chizik actually won something.
I mean, if you count an SEC championship as winning something, then yes. But I'll give this to Gene Chizik. He is the worst coach to ever win a national championship, and he was just riding on Cam Newton. That was just... And I don't want to talk about Cam Newton, because people who know me know how much I dislike him.
Well, okay. So we're going to talk about a team that also hates Cam Newton next. Because they played...
Alabama, yeah.
Yeah. 37-10 over Middle Tennessee.
Sluggish performance for the Tide.
You know that Nick Saban was not going to go all out here.
Yeah, Nick Saban always... Alabama always has a non-conference game. I believe last year was Southern Miss or maybe another team. I know they didn't play well against Southern Miss. But they always have a game in the non-conference against some absolute weakling that they just don't care.
And it's coming up against, you know, it's right before a big game this year for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I think that's really all that needs to be said about that game, unless you want to go into the stats of it. But that one really just wasn't interesting.
There wasn't anything worth talking about.
Okay.
So the next game, I'll tell you the truth, I don't know much about this with the exception that the losing team had a 17-0 lead at this point because once I got into Davis Wade Stadium, I couldn't get cell service, so I didn't know what was happening. But Oklahoma defeats Tennessee 31-24 in Rocky Top in double overtime.
Am I the only one who doesn't know how to pronounce their stadium name?
Neyland. Yes, you are.
I could have sworn it.
I think it's Neyland.
Yeah. That's how I've always said it. Nobody's corrected me until now. Like, you know.
Named after the legendary coach Robert Neyland, who won 4 national championships with
I thought it was Robert Neyland.
Neyland.
See, if Charlie Burris or any other Tennessee fans... Oh, gosh, my chair just tried to kill me. But, if any Tennessee fans are listening... I mean, this is
a... want to take that chair to an asylum.
Yeah. This is a sorry-not-sorry moment, because I really don't care... Because you just blew a game against a really overrated Oklahoma team who was led by Baker Mayfield, who couldn't keep the job at Texas Tech. You just blew your biggest chance to announce that you are a good team again for the first time in quite a while. So, you know, if any Tennessee fans are upset at the way I pronounce, you know, their stadium, just go remind yourselves of the fact that you almost beat a good team for the first time in a while. Throwing shade at Tennessee just for the heck of it. Sorry, guys. Sorry, Charlie.
You know, a majority of my mom's side of the family went to Tennessee, so I consider Tennessee to be my second favorite team.
Well, that's unfortunate. Sorry, not sorry.
Appreciate it. Anything worth talking about in Florida's 31-24 victory over the Pirates of East Carolina?
I thought Florida would actually make this one a blowout. I didn't think this one would be as close as it was.
In the epic rematch of the Birmingham Bowl.
What was the final score of the Birmingham Bowl, do you know?
I think that Florida won by a touchdown.
1 minute.
Could be wrong, though.
It was 28-20, and I was hoping it was like a perfect.
No.
But no.
But Florida doesn't look. Florida's obviously not has obviously not decided on a full time quarterback, and they're about to play at Kentucky. So. And I can't believe I'm saying that Kentucky has a significant advantage over Florida, but I'm saying it.
I'll touch on Kentucky later, but let's, you know, let's go ahead and actually, we'll use this next game because it's the last SEC game to talk about, and I'll use that to jump into the topic on Kentucky. But Kentucky, South Carolina, really, I mean, Kentucky had a 24-7 lead at one point,
yeah,
and then only scored 2 points in the second half.
I touched on this in my SEC recap, that if someone who did not even know anything about this football game, if you came up to some person and you say, hey, Kentucky beat South Carolina on the road, you'd probably think, oh man, Kentucky must have had an incredible performance overall. They didn't. Kentucky really didn't play well.
No.
Patrick Toles went 21 for 29 for 192 yards, zero touchdowns, and an interception. Their running game was okay. It was pretty good. But it wasn't stellar. Because, I mean, Stanley Boom Williams had 14 carries for 107 yards, no touchdowns. JoJo Kemp had 13 carries for 78 yards and a touchdown. They totaled 207 yards from 38 carries. Now, if you look at South Carolina's rushing game, it was very similar. 34 carries for 195 yards. So they were kind of similar there. Through the air, South Carolina didn't have a good game, and I think that South Carolina's offense is absolutely atrocious, and I can't believe I'm saying that talking about a Steve Spurrier offense, but their passing attack is just not good.
No.
This was just... I don't know how Kentucky... Because also you may think, oh, if Kentucky had a 24-7 lead in the first half with those kind of stats, South Carolina must have turned the ball over a bunch. No, they each had one turnover. South Carolina had more first downs than Kentucky. South Carolina outgained Kentucky.
My biggest thing here, and it's something that I'm gonna use to transition into the next topic, more or less. Kentucky is not good. Wait, did we talk about the A&M game?
No. I don't really find anything worth talking about.
They won 56-23 against Ball State. But I'm going to go ahead and, you know, I wrote this in my article. I don't know if you read it or not. But I don't believe that Kentucky, we forgot Missouri as well, who went on the road to Arkansas State and only
didn't
won
play well at all.
27.
They're
bad.
Their offense isn't good. Their defense is good.
Yeah.
I'll give them credit. Their defense is really good. If Missouri wins the East again, I may just go ahead and throw myself in front of a bus because I don't know what to think about Missouri in any of these situations.
Missouri's not good. Kentucky's not good. And we were all marveling at A&M's win over Arizona State. Arizona State was tied 21-21 with Cal Poly.
And they beat them by two touchdowns.
Yeah. That's not good. So I'm not buying that A&M is any good right now. You look at Arkansas. Arkansas lost to Toledo. You look at Auburn. They barely beat Jacksonville State. So one thing that, you know, I'm not worried about the rest of the schedule right now. I see the potential to get 9 wins still with what has shaken, you know, what has happened in week 2, which was really, really weird.
Indeed.
But I think it exposed a lot of teams, particularly the SEC, which I don't think the SEC is as good as we thought it was.
Right.
I think everybody was talking about, oh, you know, the gap is closed between the bottom of the SEC and the top of the SEC. I think that gap is widened, if anything, and a few teams have taken over spots at the top, whereas, you know, they've traded spaces. You know, Ole Miss and Auburn, I feel like, have switched. Where Ole Miss a couple years ago was abysmal, Auburn has been good. They have switched.
Ole Miss, in my opinion, is not going to finish worse than third in the West.
Yeah, I look at teams like Alabama and LSU. We're going throwback to 2009, 2011. You know, those teams are likely to finish top two in the West. You know, I don't think Ole Miss will finish ahead of State like you seem to do, but both of the Mississippi schools could go 9-3 this year.
I think Ole Miss could go 10-2.
Yeah.
I think there's a possibility of it because I think, because preseason I put Ole Miss 9-3 with losses to State, Auburn, and Alabama. At this point, I think they're going to beat Auburn.
But they might lose to LSU because of, I think LSU just themselves to be a very good team.
I just don't know. I mean, it's going to be a weird year. It's going to be a weird year, and I hope we'll like it.
Yeah. The one thing I forgot to talk about in the our LSU recap, and my final point of, like, the SEC game recap, outside of, you know, rolling through the schedule based on what happened this weekend, it's not unreasonable to see MSU go 9-3 or 10-2. But looking back to the LSU game, one question I had for our friends at And the Valley Shook, Kerry Muntz, you know, I asked him if Brandon Harris was the answer for LSU, and I think he is, because he looked poised all night and was able to make key plays with his arm and late with his feet in the fourth quarter that helped put MSU away. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't asked to do much, but he did enough, and he looked very good doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my final thoughts. I still see MSU potentially going 9-3, 10-2. Shameless plug for my article there. I don't know how many times I've done that, but shameless plug.
I believe that's the second time.
Cool. So.
So I guess that'll just wrap it up for our SEC stuff. And it's time to get into some questions. We got a few. Certainly got quite a few.
This show's going to run long.
Yeah, we've already been doing it for 55 minutes.
Awesome.
Reed Coker, fellow for whom the Cowbell Tolls writer, Reed Coker at Coca_Cola26. Coca spelled with a K. I guess it's like a play on his name. Huh. His question, why do you think the offense isn't running more up-tempo like we heard all offseason? Ethan? I know that you have been actually outlining and sort of just preparing for these questions. I haven't. So I'll let you go first.
The only reasons I can think of is that early on in this game, I'm throwing the Southern Miss game out the window. I don't really care about that game because I don't think that game went according to plan whatsoever.
And also, by the way, Southern Miss is better because for whoever saw their performance against Austin Peay, I'll go and tell you this. Last year, Southern Miss nearly lost to Alcorn State. And when it comes to just opponents, when it comes to FCS opponents or whatever, I'll compare Alcorn State to Southern Miss's opponent this past week, and that was Austin Peay. I'm trying to find the exact score really quickly.
52-6?
52-6, Southern Miss.
I believe is what it was.
So, yeah, Southern Miss has improved.
Yeah. But the only reason I can think that we didn't see it early on in the LSU game, is that, you know, Dan Mullen wanted to see more out of the running game and that never developed, or that the rhythm and the flow of the game never really allowed for it. I'm not really sure. This is something I've wondered about because, you know, I really want to know why we didn't see more passing early on, why the hurry-up passing game didn't develop, because the running game never showed up.
I think we probably, with how we did last year against LSU in the run, we probably thought we were able to replicate that.
And we weren't.
We weren't whatsoever.
You know, I said before the game that MSU's best shot was to force this into a shootout, and that never came to fruition. You know, that being said, our defense came to play, and that was nice. But as to Reed's question, you know, I'm not sure. I want to see that fourth quarter offense every game for all four quarters, because that's what I expected coming into the season. I knew that we might have some questions at running back, but I thought it would be fine. But I still expected this to be a pass-happy offense, more so because I didn't expect Dak to be running it. He's not running it. So I just, I don't know. do you have any sort of reasoning why we don't see a no huddle team more so? Because we saw it a lot last year, and it was supposed to be even faster this year.
I'll tell you this quarter,
but that was it.
This is probably going to be the exact same question I'm going to have these next two questions. I think it's just all because Dak wants to become an NFL quarterback in the NFL. Unless you're a part of the Philadelphia Eagles, your offense is not going to be up-tempo. Your offense is not going to be a dual-threat quarterback spread offense. Your offense is going to be led by a pro-style pocket passer quarterback. And right now, for what we've seen, that's what Dak wants to become, and that's what Dak's tried to transition into. And so far, it's, in my opinion, it's just doing nothing but hurting the team. But it's what he wants to do, and I think Dan Mullen, and I personally think, because these next two questions are pretty much centered around Dan Mullen's inability to do something with Dak Prescott, I think Dan Mullen is trying to help him become an NFL-style quarterback. So that's just my take on it. I could be completely wrong, and I think that's also going to be an answer that a lot of, because we're about to get two similar questions here, I think that's going to be the main answer that a lot of people will be giving to you. But I could be wrong, but that's just my opinion.
It's not the answer that I'm going to give.
No, it's not.
Let's jump into this next question.
The next question, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name. Please correct us if I am. But Justin Sturtevant, it's either Sturtevant or Sturtevant. Either one, that's close enough. Let's see his username. @Justin_1522, why won't Dan unleash Dak?
Do you want to go ahead and take this one? Go first.
Because I think that Dan Mullen is trying to help Dak Prescott transition into an NFL-style quarterback. And if you're talking about unleash Dak by making him run up the middle, I agree that Dak Prescott should start running, because that was sort of the heart, and that made our offense go last year. That dual threat quarterback, it's under Dan Mullen's system. Now, you're saying, why won't Dan unleash him? I'm not going to put the blame on Dan Mullen in this situation. I'm just not. If you want to have this question centered around Dan Mullen's, I guess, inability to do something with Dak Prescott, I truthfully think that Dan Mullen is trying to help him develop into an NFL-style quarterback. That's my answer. Ethan?
I actually think Dan did unleash Dak to the tune of 52 passes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because I believe, as I stated earlier, and I talked a little bit about this with someone, it might have been you, it might have been someone else in the offseason, but I believe that's what we need to see out of this offense for this year. Our offensive line isn't that great. Running game right now especially is nothing. We won't get much out of the zone read, the option running game, if Dak carries it 20 times a game, because the defense knows that no running back is going to get the ball. We look last year, halfway through the season, Dak actually was injured in what, the Kentucky game? He was injured halfway through the season with the workload that he had. And we really absolutely need Dak to be healthy. If everybody looks at the media right now as saying, we're getting no respect, wait until Dak, if Dak were to get injured, then we would get absolutely no respect, because he's the best weapon this team has.
I'll go and tell you this. If Dak gets injured, I am going to put Mississippi State at not making 6 wins, depending on where the season is. Like, if he gets injured against Auburn, I'm saying no, this season's done.
Well, Dak's not going to get injured because he's not going to be running the ball, because that's stupid. We don't need Dak to run the ball. We start looking across the nation. BYU's quarterback, Taysom Hill, he's a senior dual-threat quarterback. He's injured.
And he was injured for a majority of the season last year as well. And Taysom Hill is injured for the rest of the year.
Yeah. We look over to Utah State with Chucky Keaton, who a couple years ago was a dark horse Heisman candidate. He got injured. Both of these guys are dual threat guys, similar builds to Dak. And I really don't think, you know, they're not taking the hits that Dak is in the SEC. We don't need Dak getting hurt. And I, you know, as I stated earlier, I think our best offense is throwing it to Daronnie Wilson, throwing it to Fred Ross, Fred Brown, Gus Wally, Gabe Miles, throwing it to these guys because that's our best shot at winning games this season. The other point that I would say is everyone is expecting every defense that Dak is going to go up against is expecting him to be a runner right now. They don't respect his arm. And I think he's a better passer than what, you know, obviously even you were saying, but I think he's a better passer than people are giving him credit for. So I am content seeing this team throw it 50 something times a game. I'm happy with that. And I think any Mississippi State fan who isn't would be foolish. Sorry, guys. That's just what I believe.
Next question. From Bugsy J at JDog5513. Another Dan Mullen surrounded question. Why does Dan insist on being conservative? Why not run Dak, use Bearmore, try Aries or Lee, or do the stuff that got him hired? What's with these people just absolutely berating Dan Mullen all of a sudden?
We talked a little bit about this last night via text that a couple years ago, they might have been happy that we only lost by 2 points, but where the program is now, we expect to beat LSU, even when LSU's pretty good.
I did say this. I did text you that, and you did respond to something similar, so yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, this is kind of this is pretty much like four questions built into 140 characters, and I respect Bugsy J for doing that.
That's impressive.
First question, why does Dan insist on being conservative? Is he being conservative? I mean,
we didn't see any trick plays, but we threw it 52 times a game. I wouldn't call that conservative.
Of course, Dan Mullen is sort of a crazy person. I mean, I'm not going to crazy person in a good and a bad way when it comes to trick plays.
He's not crazy like Les Miles, but he's his own brand of crazy.
Yeah, like the fake punt jump pass against UT Martin. That's probably my favorite trick play Mississippi State has ever run under Dan Mullen. The fake pass, the fake punt jump pass. But anyways,
well, that didn't work against Auburn.
Yeah, although I don't think it was a fake punt jump pass, but it was a fake punt that Dan Mullen was a bit of an. That's one of the only times where I have genuinely called Dan Mullen an idiot when Mississippi State was up 21-0. On our own 30 in the first or second quarter, and we decide to run a fake punt that was intercepted.
Yeah.
That's one of the only few times that I've ever called Dan Mullen genuinely an idiot. But anyways, I don't really think that Dan Mullen was... I don't think Mississippi State was really conservative in this game.
I think people look at the fact that we didn't run much as being conservative, which is weird because other teams...
Because kind of running is being conservative?
Yeah. I don't know. Next part of this awesome question.
Pretty much the exact same question that we just answered. Why not run Dak?
Because it's a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea. You think it's...
I think... Now, I'll go ahead and tell you this on your remark. I'll twist it into a little bit of my opinion. I think that we should run Dak, but not run him to the extent that we did last year. Because
don't,
I think, I mean...
Don't run him to death, only run him half to death.
Yeah, we,
okay.
I don't remember the exact number because I got off the tab. But was it, like, 22 runs against LSU? I'm pretty sure he got to 30 runs against Auburn last year. I don't think we should do that. But I think we should still get him to run. And, of course, that also brings up offensive line troubles, which petrifies me. But that's just my...
But the offensive line, to their credit, did improve as the game went on.
Throughout the game, yes.
So
that's true.
And they improved when it was a passing offense and when it was hurry up.
That's true.
So I feel like I'm just right here.
Why don't we use Bear Wilson more?
He got, what, 8 receptions in that game?
Yeah, he actually, it's kind of hard to believe, but he had a pretty good game in this LSU game. 8 receptions for 86 yards and a touchdown.
He had a bad first half, but so did most of the offense.
Mm-hmm. He sort of just came on in the, pretty much came on in the fourth quarter.
Those last 2 drives.
Yeah.
Pretty much all
but
there.
I see what you're saying. I certainly see what Bugsy is saying.
We need to see it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. Why didn't we see it? That's kind of
like a
theme
like
of
Southern Miss.
Why didn't we see Durania earlier? So,
you know, against Southern Miss, I'm pretty sure it was just because of off the field issues. This game, I don't know. That's actually a very fair question. Try Aries Williams or Dontavian Lee.
We actually saw both of them. Lee had a reception, and Williams had a carry, but Williams' carry was for -5 yards. And, you know, I personally think that one has to do with how the game went. When the offense was moving, it was late, and it was through the air. Dak's runs got sniffed out every time he tried. Shump couldn't find any seams. Holloway was the only one who was quick enough to get away from LSU's defenders. So, there's no way Williams and Lee are faster than Holloway. So there was no real need to try to get them 10 carries or so because it just wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my...
And finally, why doesn't he do the stuff that got him hired? Well, the stuff that got Dan Mullen hired was to rebuild an absolutely oblivious program. And I think he's done that well. I think the point
he's trying to make is why isn't this offense like last year's offense, where it was pretty much the same offense that we saw with the 2007 to 2008 Florida Gators? Yeah, mm-hmm. Last year's Mississippi State offense was a poor man's version of that Florida team.
Yeah.
And we've already touched on that, more or less.
So, my recommendation for those is just don't blame Dan Mullen. Don't all of a sudden think he's a terrible coach, because we saw it in the Facebook comments of the post. Please, you know, we ain't getting anywhere with this coach. Well,
we've gotten farther with him than we have with anybody else recently.
Recently, yeah.
Yeah.
So, our next question, I actually have a decent hope. I have a hopefully decent answer to this question. Corbin at CorbinGW14. Should Devin Bell or Weston Graves be our kicker? May I answer this?
Yeah, feel free. I haven't prepared for this one. So.
I haven't either. This is just genuinely off the top of my head.
Cool.
You're gonna hear this, Corbin, and anyone else who asks the same question. You're gonna hear this every single time you ask this question to a Mississippi State fan. Weston Graves, we don't know what he's like from about 45 and out. All we know is that he's an accurate kicker about 45 and in. I mean, he made a 43-yard field goal, so obviously, 45 and in, he's an accurate kicker. Devin Bell has the leg. 45 and out, that's his. The problem is, Devin Bell is not accurate, and not trying to, like, bash Devin Bell or something, but he's not accurate, and as far as we know from what we've seen so far, Weston Graves is accurate. In my opinion, Weston Graves should be our kicker. We should try him out from about 47 to 52 in that range, and if he can make a field goal from that range, boom, he's our kicker. The main reason why this question is coming up is because should Dan Mullen have given Weston Graves that chance? I think if that... This is what made me the angriest of anything else in that football game, when that delay of game penalty happened with 8 seconds left. And that's one thing That's one thing that I'm angry about. Angry with Dan Mullen. I don't know if it was Dan Mullen's fault or not, but we had one timeout left, and he could have called that before the play clock went out.
He did take credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
He took the ball.
That's one thing that I'm angry with Dan Mullen about, but that's about it. I think if that delay of game penalty never happened, it would have been a 47-yard field goal. Weston Graves probably would have gotten out there, because we saw him nail a 43-yarder. So try him about 4 yards out. Because it was a 52-yarder, and 9 yards is a pretty considerable distance, and that was the difference between Weston Graves' 43-yarder and Devin Bell's missed 52-yarder, that's why Devin Bell came out of here, was because it was a 52-yarder. Once again, Devin Bell, we saw it in 2013. He's not really accurate, but he has the leg, and that's a main reason why we brought him on campus, is because he has the leg.
He does
kickoffs.
He's actually, Logan Cook does the kickoffs.
That's why Devin Bell punts.
Yes. He's a phenomenal punter.
He really is, and I mean, back in 2013, Baker Swedenborg was a Ray Guy finalist, and he was replaced by Devin Bell at punter midway through the season. So,
yep.
There you go. But Corbin, your question is, should Weston Graves or Devin Bell be our kicker? I'll go with Weston Graves. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, Ethan.
No, not really. I mean, you touched on every angle of that question.
So, next question is from Alex Holloway at Alex H. Way. He has a very weird profile picture, but...
Is he related to Brandon?
I don't know. I couldn't tell.
We definitely can't tell by his profile picture.
But his profile picture is some yellow thing, and his header photo is a picture of someone who looks like a built-up Jared from Subway in front of an American flag, and I really hope it's not Jared. Anyways... his question is, why do I let Mississippi State draw me in every time? Because Mississippi State had an opportunity to beat LSU, and you would want to watch the possibility of Mississippi State's beating LSU. But you know what? he kind of has a point in this question, but I'm not,
There was a reply to this.
There was, from Greg, at GregBenNC.
That is an excellent question. I've been asking myself for 40 years, enormous amount of disappointment.
Well, if you're talking about 40 years ago was the 70s and the 80s, and those were some dark times for Mississippi State. So that really was pretty disappointing.
There were some good years mixed in there in the 80s. But
81, pretty much.
Yeah, but I look at, you know, we look at the span of time, and we look at, obviously, I have a different perspective than most Mississippi State fans, but I've seen them struggle as well here and there. This program's on the rise. You mentioned it last night that a couple of years ago, we would have been just happy to be contending with this LSU team, to only lose by 2 points. And I think that this is a very underrated LSU team. But I think we are almost there. And I've made the comparisons from Dak Prescott to when Baylor had RG3. I've made those program comparisons. This program is on the rise. This is a building program. And I don't think we're that far out, honestly. So, as for getting drawn in every time, I think it's part of the fun. I think we're almost there. And when we do continuously get to a point, because this team can honestly get there by the end of the season, but once we do get to a point where this program can regularly beat teams, it'll make all those struggles, all these crappy losses in the last seconds worth it, honestly. So that's my thought on that.
And our final question is a statement. Talk about this. WTW 2400. Talk about this. And he linked us to a six-pack speak thread. And when I first saw that, I was like, oh, God, no. I don't really want to be on...
I mean, I don't do the message boards, but it's
I'm a member, but I don't care.
It looks like he started this thread.
Yes. And so,
judging by his tweets, he sent it to, I guess he only sent it to us. I thought last night I saw him send it into, the Bulldog Sports Radio, but I guess only us. So are we the sidetrack here? Are we the premier Mississippi State podcast then? If he sent it to us,
obviously.
Not obviously. Bulldog Sports Radio.
I mean, I don't care if any Bulldog Sports Radio podcasts, I don't care if they're not on iTunes, but are they in the iTunes top 300 for college and high school podcasts?
Probably not.
No, they're not.
Take that, Bryant Haydad. Take that, Visporto.
Yeah, take that, Bob Karskan, and your 13,000 Twitter followers. Ha! But hey, Justin Sutton, co-editor for whom the Cowboy Tolls is on Bulldog Sports Radio. So, hi, Justin. Hi, friend. But pretty much what the six-pack speak thread is suggesting that this year's loss, this LSU loss, is very similar to the Alabama loss last year. And we both agree that's pretty much the only thing that we can, that's really sticks out. And he has some points here, and and it's a really long paragraph, and I'm not going to read all of it, but the basics is score, how we fell behind 19-0 against Alabama early, we fell behind 14-0 against LSU early, Alabama jumped out, got back to a good lead at 25-13. LSU had 21-6. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the way how the game went out when it comes to scoring. That's the only real similarity that sticks out in my opinion.
When you look big picture at the grand scheme of things, just at the broadest view with the biggest lens possible, it does kind of look like it, those were similar games. I just didn't feel like the flow of the game was all that similar. Because to me, I mentioned this last night, it felt like Mississippi State, it was constantly in this game, even though we were down 14-0. It felt like everything was within reach. Maybe it was because I was watching it on TV last year. I wasn't in Tuscaloosa. Thank God I wasn't.
Yeah.
But I just, that one felt so out of reach for so long. And even when we were able to close it in, we weren't, it would have taken an incredible miracle for us to have won that game. This game, we almost won. There's not enough similarities outside of the score. And maybe it's that intangible just flow of the game that is getting to me, but I just don't see the similarities like he does. But I mean, credit to him for looking abstract there. So
yeah. Now I will go ahead and tell you this, because I'll say this. I don't get on any message boards, but I am a member, but I don't get on them. But I just decided to rummage through here, and someone has a thread saying rank these in order of heartbreak. Three of these games are three of the four most heartbreaking games I've ever been to. He says 2009 LSU, 2010 Auburn, 2013 Auburn, and 2015 LSU. I don't know why he's including 2011 Auburn in that. I never found 2010 Auburn really heartbreaking. But that's just an interesting question there.
We're not going into that. That is a whole different can of worms.
I don't want to relive it.
Yeah, there's something about these damn Tigers.
I know, right? And I really hope it doesn't start against Missouri this year. I hope
they're so bad. If it starts against Missouri, I'm dropping out.
Please,
I'll go live in the mountains somewhere.
No, okay. But yeah, that'll wrap it up for all of our questions, and that'll pretty much just wrap it up for this episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls. Ethan, do you have any final thoughts?
First and foremost, we want to extend our condolences to the family, friends, co-workers, and students of Professor Ethan Schmidt, the student, the victim of the shooting at Delta State this afternoon.
Indeed.
It's a tragic situation that those of us at Mississippi State, we got a taste of, but we never saw the full fruit of that. And they are seeing that. And that's something that nobody should endure. And they're on our minds and in our prayers. And secondly, less depressing than the first one, you know, I'm not sure if I should really touch on this or not, but I'm going to anyway. I'd like to apologize to the members of the famous Maroon Band who read the article that was posted today and were offended this afternoon. Neither Daniel or I wrote the piece, but since we're both writers for Whom the Cowbell Tolls, since this is a podcast for Whom the Cowbell Tolls, I want to say that our goal here on the podcast and over at the blog is to not bash anything associated with Mississippi State or really any university. That's not our goal. And I'm sorry that happened. And I kind of want to end this on a happy note, but I don't really have anything besides the fact that I just had some really good pizza and I got my True Maroon shirt today. So
I didn't have any pizza and I don't have a True Maroon shirt.
Well, I'm sorry.
I just ruined everything.
Yeah, those are my final thoughts for what is the world's longest episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls.
Yes, we are running at an hour and a half.
Guess the Guinness World Record for that.
I mean, if Mississippi State's already set a Guinness World Record,
why can't we set one too?
Why can't we set one?
Yeah.
I'll call them up today. The problem is they need to, like, look at us doing it live. Whatever. We're going to have to go 2 hours Thursday. But that will wrap it up for this episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls. On Thursday, we'll be doing our Northwestern State preview. Whatever there is to preview about that. We'll be doing our SEC picks, and we'll talk about any other Mississippi State news that happens from now until Thursday. But for Ethan Lee, I'm Daniel Black. Thank you all for listening, and bye, everybody.